don't want to waste knowledge. That knowledge is in my head. I didn't mention this before, but I've been obsessed with dying since I was in my early 20s. And that's because at age 47, my dad had his first heart attack. And at 54, he had a quadruple bypass. And I never thought he'd make 60. Now, thankfully, he made 76, died a couple of years ago. But I've been obsessed with assuming I'm going to die. I don't want to die having not shared this message with other people. And that's what drove me to write the book.
Welcome to Get Invested on the Property Hub podcast channel, the leading weekly show to help you unlock your full self, health, and wealth potential. I'm your host, Bushy Martin, and each week I go deep with the best investors, experts, leaders, and founders to find out what it takes to break free from the grind, discover freedom, and live by design. Subscribe now and join me and get invested in the life you really want. Let's get started.
Hi, Freedom Fighters. Why is it that you just never seem to have enough money to do all the things that you want to enjoy in life? Well, today, you're going to find out, as well as learn what you can do about it, so that you can get more out of your life and live the way you want. Following our captivating and engaging chat in part one with Max Phelps on his very interesting personal, professional, and passive journey and the great lessons learned, we're now going to deep dive into his fascinating new book, Spending Fast and Slow: Why Your Money Disappears So Fast and How to Slow Down the Flow. And the title reminds me of one of my very favourite books, Thinking Fast and Slow, by Nobel Prize winner Daniel Kahneman, who's a world-renowned psychologist and one of the pioneering fathers of behavioural economics, which I'm now sure has been part of the inspiration having sped read your book, Max. So welcome back and let's get invested again.
Thanks for having me back on again. Love it. And yes, definitely, Daniel Kahneman, one of my heroes.
Yeah, likewise. I just love the way he thinks and bring the sort of emotional, psychological mindset part to the whole equation, which economists like to ignore at the best of stage because I think we're automatrons or robots. But to sort of get into your book, which is a... Exactly. Now, I love the book. Having sped read it, there's some really meaty subjects there that really open people's eyes to the opportunity that's before them to better understand themselves, to be able to then better manage their money. So to set the scene, what are the biggest problems and mistakes that people make around money and saving and investment, Max?
Well, the first thing is trying to fix your savings. In other words, send a fixed amount to savings and then spending everything else. That's typically what most people, the way they were set up. And the other big thing is that most of us, and this is what I did for years as well, have your pay land in a bank account, you have a debit card linked to that bank account, and you've now just screwed yourself from a psychological perspective. You'll never be as good with money until you change that habit. And almost, you know, probably 99% of Aussies are in that situation right now. Your pay lands in a bank account, and you have access to that bank account. It's crazy once you understand the psychology. Absolutely batshit crazy.
Totally agree. Now, there's an allied exercise to this, which, and you've touched on in the green room, and that's people's misuse of offset accounts. Do you want to shed a bit of light on that one as well?
Yeah. So one of the big myths in our industry is the, what you do is get the offset account and put all your pay in the offset account, have a credit card linked to the offset account, and you're 55 days interest free, and some you're going to imagine you pay off your mortgage. And it's all smoke and mirrors and utter bullshit, and no human can do that properly. And I go, oh, but I did it. I did it. I paid my mortgage. I actually had a guy once said to me, I paid my mortgage off in 7 years because of doing that. I said, okay, how much was your mortgage? He said, oh, it was $700,000. I said, okay, well, based on the interest rates at the time, for you to pay your mortgage off in $700,000 mortgage in 7 years, you pay massively more towards that mortgage by earning lots of money. So it was paying lots of money towards your mortgage. I said, what was your average credit card bill? And he said, $7,000 a month. I said, okay, that's a pretty big credit card bill, by the way. This is a guy who was spruiking property. He was, you know, making a fortune off selling off the plans. So he's making really good coin. He goes, anyway, $7,000 a month. I said, okay, let's just imagine for a second, your credit card bill is $7,000 a month. The only benefit from having that money sitting in the offset account is that $7,000 sitting there for a year. Now, interest rates at the time are around 5%. 5% of $7,000 is $350. So you save $350 a year by using that strategy. That did not pay off your $700,000 mortgage in 7 years. In fact, $350 a month, $350 a year, sorry, it takes something like 10 years before you save 1 month's worth of repayments in theory. But in practice, you've got to pay a $395 annual fee to get the bloody thing. Yeah. So you've saved nothing.
Yeah.
You don't think the banks are idiots. They're not going to give you the money for nothing. And I go through that exercise with people all the time. You say, well, okay, supposing you didn't manage that $7,000 on a credit card, supposing you actually tried to stick to a sensible amount, like $5,000 a month, for example, and you just plop $5,000 a month into an account that was just for spending, you would stick to that $5,000 because that's what you've got. And as human beings, we're brilliant at using the resources we've got available to get the outcomes we want. That's what we're good at. That's what biology has trained us to be good at doing. When we use a credit card, none of that kicks in. We're just acting like baboons.
Yeah, totally agree. Well, that's a great segue into your book, Spending Fast and Slow. So to kick off on that, Max, why did you write it? What are the key messages and who's it best suited for?
Well, so why did I write it? Well, we learn from our mistakes, right? And as far as I'm concerned, if I've learned from my mistakes, can I help other people learn from my mistakes too? Can you please not make the same mistakes I did? And so for 12 years, my wife and I are very different personalities with money. I was raised in a family of 9 kids, no money, as a tight ass. And I'm still a tight ass today in most areas of my life. My wife, on the other hand, she was also raised with very little money. The difference is in her household, it was normal to gamble. Now, when you're in a gambling household, you've either got no money because it was all spent on the wrong stuff, or you get the win, and when we get the win, we go and get the washing machine, and we go and get new stuff, and we have all stuff. So it's like when you've got money, you spend it as fast as you can. And so my wife very much is what we call a shopaholic. She loves to shop. Now, when you put those two together, what you end up with is a balanced family where you pay the credit card bill off in full, but it's always a bit bigger than you think it should be. And at the same time, you never really get where you want to go, and you have arguments all the time. You're always at loggerheads. You know, every time I saw the credit card bill, it's like, you know, my wife would get dressed to go out in the evening, and I'd look at what she's wearing, and instead of going, "Oh, you look nice, dear," I'd be going, "Where did you buy that? How much was that?" And I love the fact that you're laughing so silently. I don't know if that comes across in the podcast, but you're sitting there laughing your head off, and I can't hear a bloody thing.
No, I'm not trying to make too much noise, so I interrupt what you're sharing with us, Max.
I've never quite seen someone laugh so hard without making a noise. But it's making me laugh too, so thank you for that. But yeah, so this is the dichotomy. And so why did I write it? I wrote it because we worked out by mistake how to fix the problem. Once we worked out that what we were doing is the right thing and the way we're fixing it was the right thing, I tried to then help more people. I started coaching people. When I saw people in the mortgage business, I said, oh, what we maybe need to do is do this and organize your money this way and you'll maybe get better. And the more I started showing other people, the more I realized that other people are on average just as bad as me and my wife were, and on average can go so much better and do things so much better. And also we've refined and got it a better and better and better and better process as we've gone. So I've learned as much from my clients and coaching this over the last 10 years as I learned by, you know, accidentally doing stuff and figuring out work. But then I found other things that work even better as we go. And so I don't want to waste knowledge. That knowledge is in my head. I didn't mention this before, but I've been obsessed with dying since I was in my early 20s. And that's because at age 47, my dad had his first heart attack. And at 54, he had a quadruple bypass. And I never thought he'd make 60. Now, thankfully, he made 76, died a couple of years ago. But I've been obsessed with assuming I'm going to die. I don't want to die having not shared this message with other people. And that's what drove me to write the book.
Yeah, I love that. It's again, the more you share, the more I realize we've got very similar outlooks, because in my own book, Max, I actually worked out my drop-dead date. The end, because there's actual actuary.
Yeah, you can jump on,
and based on your hereditary and your
mylongevity.com.au is a site you can go to and find that out.
Yeah, so based on that prediction, I haven't updated since I've written the book, but I'm due to drop dead when I'm 77, So I haven't got a whole heap of years left, and it's a great motivator to me. A lot of people go, oh, that's really doom and gloom. Why would you focus on that? But I find it really inspirational because it means I've got a limited time to enjoy my time on the planet and try and help as many as I can along that pathway. So I love we've got similar motivations there. I now want to switch gear in relation to some of the core elements of the book, and I'd love for you to talk to us about the intricacies of human decision-making and the cognitive biases and heuristics that lead us astray when it comes to money and spending, Max.
Yeah, so you don't realize how gullible we are until you see some psychology studies that explain it. But Daniel Kahneman put it best when he described the way our brains work, and we have two types of thinking. There's the fast thinking, which is system one. He calls it system one. And it's the intuitive. It allows us to make quick decisions. We need to be able to do that as humans. We don't need to sit and analyze a problem. You know, if there's a saber-toothed tiger coming for us, we need to hide, run, or fight. We don't need to sit there pondering which of those is the best thing to do, looking at all the available data and everything else. That's
doing a spreadsheet is there.
Exactly right. Run, fight, or hide. You know, that's your only options. Pick one, do it, you know, and you'll survive. And that's how our ancestors survived. And so as human beings, we have the ability to make these fast decisions. And over 90% of the daily decisions we made are made fast. They're made just on assumptions that this is probably okay. Now, system two thinking is the slow, deliberate style of thinking, which is when we're analyzing things. And the best thing way to think about this in terms of when we're spending money is when we're going to buy a house. We tend to spend a lot more time and effort looking into it and thinking about it and analyzing the properties and understanding how it's going to work. That's a slow decision. Whereas, you know, spending $4.50 at Macca's on the way home on a portion of chips, that's a very fast decision. We assume it's probably fine. The problem is that when we add up all those fast decisions from a money perspective, they add up to more than we spend on the stuff we think we're spending our money on.
Yep.
You've probably had this conversation thousands of times too. You say to people, excluding the rent and the mortgage, how much do you spend each month? And they'll go, oh, you know, a couple of $1,000s. And they've gone, oh, this is my electric, my gas, my council rates, my water rates, my phone bill, my insurances. They add up all the things, that groceries, add it all up. And then they go, well, if that's about $2,000, we'll add a little bit on for, you know, entertainment. Call it $2,500. And then you go, that's interesting, because according to the bank, the household expenditure measure says that you, for a household your size, you should be spending about $3,000-$3,500. So it seems like you're spending really low. Now, if I ask you another question, how much do you put on, you use a credit card? Oh, you use a credit card. How much is your average credit card bill? Oh, it's about $4,000. Well, then you spend $4,000 a month then. but people are out by that much. They think they're spending two and a half, and they're spending four. Or like this bloody spruiker spending $7,000 a month. I've got clients right now spending $12,000 a month as a household of three. They're on great money, but they're worried about their mortgage and they're worried about their repayments. And they don't see that $12,000 a month is the problem.
Scary stuff. So can you help us then uncover the sort of these invisible forces that shape our financial choices and the money traps that may actually be holding us back? And
it's not just money traps.
Stress.
Yeah. So the thing is, there are opportunities to buy stuff absolutely everywhere. If you're at your phone, there's stuff getting advertised to you. I had an interesting conversation with a journalist on the weekend, and he said, you're talking about impulse shoppers. Now, the interesting thing there is we think about, you're an impulse shopper. My wife's an impulse shopper. She'll just go and buy a pair of shoes on impulse. Yeah. But what about the guys that spend $4 on the takeaways or these days, $4 on a soft drink?
Yeah.
You can drink from a tap for free or spend $4 on a soft drink. And you go, that's only $4. It is only $4. But if you do that twice a day over the course of a month, that's not $4 anymore. That's $240 a month. That's probably as much as she spends on the bloody shoes or whatever. And so it's those little things that add up. And now, unfortunately, money is, in one generation, money has gone from being a real physical thing to being an abstract concept of digits in the sky somewhere that we just don't really quite fathom. in one generation, and we've never had this before. Money's gone from being a physical thing where I've got money, I give you something, you give me something, and I understand that. And I now know I've got less. And psychologists talk about the pain of paying. I feel the pain of paying because I paid and I've got less money. Back in the days when we used to use cash, for those that remember them, you could have a $50 note and you always felt bad about breaking the 50.
Totally.
And so you'd say no to something, not because you didn't have the money, because you had 50 bucks in your hand, but because you didn't feel it was worth breaking the 50 for $4 fries. And so you wouldn't break the 50 until it was something more substantial. And then once you broke it, the money's gone and it would disappear. And everybody knew that. Everyone knew that money disappeared. And that's why that we used to hide it at home in envelopes, in tins, under the mattress, even in a bank. Most people didn't have bank accounts that they use the way you do now. Banks were places where you put money you didn't want to touch.
But on the way, it's really interesting, Max, and you've probably seen this of recent, but the number of cases I'm now hearing where if you go into a bank branch and want to pull out cold hard cash, it's pretty difficult now. A lot of the banks don't offer the cash that allow you to do that anymore. So the whole system is really now orientated around this intangible nature of money, which means that we don't understand, appreciate its value, and therefore can be spending it without even thinking about it.
Now, I want to give you an example of something. This is a crazy study, true study. Psychologists did this study. If you think you're in control of your money and you think that even groceries is a bill, then I want to tell you this story. So they've lined up people in a supermarket and they've asked them one question on the way in, and then they've measured their spending through the supermarket on the way out. That's all they've done. But they had two groups. The first group got asked, how much money have you got in your retirement fund? We would call it super, but it was in America. How much have you got in your retirement fund? And they would answer the question. The question would be tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars. The second group of people were asked, what's the smallest note you've got in your wallet? And they would say, oh, it's a dollar, it's $5 or whatever. Yeah. Then they did their shopping. What do you think was the result of that shopping trip?
I can guess, but the ones who said they had hundreds of thousands of dollars would spend a lot more because of there's this mythical notion.
More.
Yeah.
The bill was, it's not a grocery bill. They spent, just because they were thinking of a big number, everything in the supermarket felt irrelevant. And that then maybe, yeah, I'll treat myself to the dinner, the nicest steak, and, you know, buy myself some treats and do everything else. Whereas the people were thinking about that $2 or $5 note, which is, geez, everything's expensive these days, and cutting back. And so they walked out of the supermarket spending like 20-odd% less.
That mental priming is something that advertisers do extremely well now. So you know, our whole system is really stacked up against us.
Absolutely.
And it's actually getting worse as a consequence of this intangible nature that money's now take us on. So tell us about the restructuring the flow of money and the fast and slow money system that you talk about in the book.
So fundamentally, we need to understand that the way that we're all paid into a bank account that we access, that is wrong. It's flawed. It doesn't work. Now, lots of people have followed other systems like the barefoot system, and they've got their different buckets, and buckets work. But they still come from a flawed concept of our pay lands in an account that we can access. Yes. That's the equivalent of dad saying, oh, I'll give you, you know, your $100 for your groceries for the week and put the rest in my pocket. Whatever's in his pocket is getting spent. It's going to disappear. Yeah. Much better to put all your money into another system. So firstly, we talk about double banking. Anyone using one bank account for one bank. So even people following the barefoot system, everything's all the orange bank, ING. And everything, and they've got their card for this and their card for that and whatever. But it's all in ING. And so once they run out, which they're going to do because they're managing their money on a pay cycle, which often is monthly, and money always runs out in week three, then they go through the bank account, switch money over, and then they spend it. And then they go, oh, but I had to spend money because of this. It was because of the electric bill was due. I had to dip into my savings because of Christmas. I had to dip into my savings because of the rego. No, you didn't. You had to dip in your savings because you spent all the bloody money every pay. When you flip things around the other way and budget in reverse, so instead of budgeting for the hard stuff, the electric, the gas and whatever, of course you have to work out what those things are going to cost for the year, not for the pay, for the year, because over the course of a year, they'll average out.
Yeah.
Work out what you want to spend and give yourself that as spending money.
Yeah.
Not on a pay cycle. That doesn't make any sense. weekly. We all have a weekly routine. We see our friends, we go shopping, we play football, we do what we do weekly.
Yeah.
And this was, by the way, one of the things I learned from clients. We didn't do this ourselves. You hide the money in a bank account you can't touch, no card access, and then you give yourself money every week, and not what you think you want to spend, but enough, just enough to cover the groceries, which is not a bill, to cover the groceries and whatever else you do on a routine, like coffees, lunches, all that kind of stuff, whatever you need for your routine. Once you get that every week. Now, by the way, if you do your grocery shopping and it's a cheap week, get takeaway, go out for dinner, do whatever you like. It's fine. But if you just did your grocery shopping, it was one of those weeks when you had to buy all the meats and you had to buy the washing powder and everything else, and there's no money left, well, then guess what? Stay on the weekend and don't do the stuff that you would have done, but you're square for the week and it's fine. Don't worry, there's more money coming next week. And any of us can cruise through 2 to 3 days with no money, but none of us can cope with half a month.
Absolutely.
So that's the first thing is just using two different banks. One is just for that spending money.
Okay, so moving on from there,
I want to take a step back. The reason I want to take a step back is because there's absolutely no point in budgeting whatsoever if you haven't got something else to do with your money. So if you haven't set yourself any goals to save up to buy a home, to pay the home off, to save up to buy an investment property, to save up for a lovely holiday, to save up to buy a new car, if you haven't got any goals to do any of that stuff, then there's no point in anything. Yeah. So we always start off with your goals. And then once you understand the goals, then you've got your basic premise of money lands in an account you can't touch. You get money every week, and then money goes towards the goals. And you have a separate account for your holidays and a separate account for the car and a separate account for the future or the investment property or whatever you're doing next. The more you separate those things out, the easier life becomes. And it also tells you why you're not spending too much this week. But we also found that if you only manage money week to week, you feel broke. And if you feel broke 52 weeks of the year, you'll end up dipping into the other buckets. So we call it fun. Barefoot call it splurge, but he mixes holidays and splurge, which are completely different things. Yeah. But you need to buy gifts. You need to buy gadgets and clothes and other things from time to time. And we do that, I don't care when you're paid, monthly. And we land that money on the first. Because if I say to you, you know, what's happening in your life in November, your brain quickly goes, oh, November, well, this is this birthday and this anniversary and this is happening.
Yeah.
December, we know it's Christmas or whatever you're celebrating. You know, January, it might be something else. But when we then know that that money is for that purpose, and therefore we best not spend it on the other stuff. And if there's nothing else happening, go to town, blow it.
Yeah.
Get takeaway 7 nights for that week, if that's what you want, if that's what makes you happy. But do things that make you happy, and make a conscious decision to do things that make you happy once a month. That's all. And then the weekly money takes care of itself.
Yeah, love that. So once you've got those foundations in place, what are your suggestions on where to from there?
So the book itself really only takes us to doing that. Because if we can just do that and do it properly and understand why nearly that is not that, and because a lot of people say, oh, yeah, because I used to teach this before to people, and then they come back to me and they go, oh, I did what you said. And I went, no, you didn't do what I said at all. You compromised it to suit what you were doing before. So the book goes through the intricacies of why we need to do precisely what's recommended and how to vary it, where the variations work and how they work, whatever. But after that, I've got another. My first book is all about property investing. I love property investing. Yeah. Putting money into property is brilliant. I do it more of it. But if you want to put more money into super, put more money in super. Want to put more money in shares, put more money in shares. You want to pay the house off. The average person who's gone through this program has knocked 10 years off the house, off their mortgage.
Yeah.
And that saved hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Absolutely right. And it's not that difficult. You don't notice any difference day to day. That's the key bit here. Now, something I'd love your thoughts on, Max, because there's something that's troubled me for a long time is that, you know, in this age of instant short-termism, How do we motivate others to actually embrace delayed gratification so that they're actually investing themselves now for their long-term benefit? Any thoughts on that?
So here's an interesting psychological point here, is that we often life's a bit crap, and we look for something to give us a lift, and we know that buying something will give us that lift. But they've also done studies about writing a list. So the benefits of having a monthly spending pot is you've now got money landing, but it's landing, and you know when it's landing, on the first. Yeah. My wife, she started doing this by herself, and I've later worked out that it's a brilliant thing to do, and I've seen the studies that back that up, is that she writes herself a list, and she says, oh, I've seen that new thing I want, I'm going to put on the list. Now, guess what your brain does when you write something like that on the list? It gives you that dopamine hit, exactly the same as if you just bought it, but with no buyer's remorse afterwards. So typically what happens when you buy something, you get this surge in dopamine when you buy it, and then afterwards you start to go, oh God, or what's my partner going to say about that? Or should I have done that? Or do I really need it? And what if it doesn't fit? And what if I don't wear it? Or what if it's not right? And you get that, and so you get this deep dive into, like, you know, the pit, and then you end up feeling worse. And of course, how do you get yourself out of that pit?
And spend some more money.
That's right. So one of the best things that you'll ever do is writing a list of things that you're thinking about buying. And then when the first of the month rolls around, you go, oh, well, I've still got the new iPhone on the list, and I've still got this, and I've still got that and the other. Which one of those am I going to choose? And that now is engaging system two. We're now thinking, which one do we want? Which one do we think we'll get more value out of? And what happens is you might have 10 things on the list and pick four. And then go, well, I might leave the six on the list, or I might knock one or two off. But if you leave something on the list for 2 to 3 months, you then go, it's never going to make the list. It's never going to make the cut. It's never going to get to the top. I'm not going to buy it. Why am I kidding myself? Cross it off.
Love it. Love
it. So much better to cross something off a list that you didn't buy than to put something, than just to buy it, you know, because fine.
I love that. It's such a simple exercise that has the, as you say, the immediate benefits from the dopamine hit, as if you'd bought the thing anyway. But it's building in that system two thinking that is the part that most people don't get around to. So
now I have a second list. So my list is different to my wife's list. She has a to buy list. I have my own list, which is things that make me happy list. And so when I'm feeling down, I look for my list of things that make me happy. And it could be going for a walk outside. It could be phoning a mate or phoning a brother or sister, because I'm bloody low to them. And often when you're feeling a bit down, you don't feel like reaching out to someone. But at the same time, 9 times out of 10, if you just rang up, you know, rang up a mate or rang up a brother or sister and say, hey, look, I was just, you know, just thinking about you and just wanted to say hi. And they go, oh, yeah, hi, how are you doing? So, oh, well, I've just been a bit down, actually, and, you know, just wanted to hear your voice. And they go, I said, oh, no, I'm glad you called, and I wanted to catch up with you this. And all of a sudden, within a few minutes, they feel valued as a friend, valued as a brother or sister, because you called them when you weren't feeling at your best. And so you've given them the opportunity to create value and feel good about themselves. And they could have been just about to fall into their own little pit of, you know, despair or whatever it is, and you just lifted them from it because they feel good about themselves because they made you feel good. And then at the end of the call, wrap it up and say, oh, I'm so glad I called you. It's so great. We must do this more often. We always say that. We must do this more regularly. We must do this more often. And so I have my list of things that make me happy that don't cost money because I'm a tight ass.
I love it. I love it. There's the great couple of awesome, very usable and immediately actionable strategies that can make a world of difference. Max, I now want to shift into what I affectionately refer to as the ambush fast ball round, which where I give you a blindfold and cigarette and ask you the quick questions that everyone wants to glean your words of wisdom on. Now, the first of those, and you've shared a number of these with us over the last two episodes, but what's your favourite quote and why?
I see, one of my favourites is the enough quote, which I gave you before. But there's another quote that I love. I don't remember who said it, but I remember hearing it, and it was, everyone is always right from their perspective. Now, once you embrace that, it makes you want to understand what their perspective is rather than trying to force your perspective on them, because they believe they're right. They don't believe that they're wrong. They're not saying it because they're an idiot. They're not saying because they think, they're just looking at the world differently to you are. And so asking and understanding their perspective is a very valuable thing to do.
Yeah, I love that. I always said that there's three sides to every story. There's your side, my side, and the truth. And it's how we perceive things that creates the difference. So beautifully said. Back in the literary field, apart from your awesome book and a couple of books that you mentioned during our chat, what's the top book that you'd recommend we read and why?
You see, I was going to go with, Thinking Fast and Slow is a good book, but it's quite thick. It's quite hard work.
The Bible, there's no doubt.
I'd have to go with Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah.
Just because it's such an easy read, and the analogy is beautifully done.
It is, yeah. And it's as applicable today as it was when I read it back in the 1990s. So it's timeless pearls in that. Now, switching back in the investment arena for a moment, what's the best and the worst piece of investment advice that you've ever received?
Yeah. So the worst investment advice I received, so we sold the family home to go buy property in America, right? But when I did that, I had to break a fixed rate loan. And so I tried to transfer the fixed rate loan onto another property.
Yep.
And someone said, oh, these over 55s up in Eagleby in Brizzy, mate, the yield on those is phenomenal. You want to get one of these? So I went, yeah, great. And I went and signed a contract to buy one, only to find, firstly, I couldn't get a mortgage on it and they wouldn't transfer the mortgage, so I paid the break fees anyway. Secondly, I owned that property for 5 years and I sold it at a loss. I bought it for $80,000 and I sold it 5 years later for $78,000. And that high yield he was talking about was before fees. And it's in an over 55s complex and you have to pay the over 55s management fee because they've got on-site managers and stuff. And that was $100-something a week. So that was the worst advice I received.
And the best? What about the flip side?
Oh, well, it'd have to be go buy property in America. I mean, that was just amazing to, you know, to go and buy property. You know, when we did 2011, I bought 2010, I picked up the advice, but I acted on it, which a lot of people didn't bother doing. That was amazing advice.
Yeah, I love it. Now, we talked a lot about habits during our conversation, breaking bad ones and creating new ones. So what's a personal happy habit or daily discipline that you employ that's contributed most to your success, Max?
I don't know whether it's contributed most to my success, but what I find works for me really well, starts my day off really well, is opening up the blinds first thing in the morning and looking out at the water views that I've got, but just seeing the sunlight. So seeing bright sunlight and then taking a cold shower. Once you do that, you can face anything for the rest of the day. And you feel good. You can't help it. You feel good.
I've been trying to do that, and I've been really hit and miss. I'll be perfectly upfront. I've done a lot of the Wim Hof breathing stuff that really oxygenating and energizing the body, but there's certainly times in the winter where that, 10 or 15 seconds into the cold shower, I'm going, nah, that's enough for me.
See, I
give you the resilience to keep going, Max.
I start with it. In fact, I first started doing this on my grandson's birthday, and he has another birthday in 2 days' time. So I get my anniversary in 2 days' time. So it's just one of those things that you just go, no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. And the thing is, the message it sends to your brain is like, if you say you're going to do something, you do it. And so just getting on doing it. Of course, make the bed is the other one. Yeah. That's the other part of the routine I forgot to mention. Get out of the bed, make the bed. When I tuck in my wife's side of the bed, I open up the blinds, look outside at the beautiful blue water. Then I get in the cold shower, and then you've already accomplished a lot for the day, and you haven't even started.
Yeah, I love that, because the resilience that creates by just such a simple act in the cold shower, in the self-belief that reinforces, as well as the raft of health benefits in terms of increasing your immune responses. There's a whole bunch of health benefits that go with that. So I haven't given up on the cold showers, but I certainly have been a bit hit with this. In that regard, so I'm going to get you to keep me honest on that one, Max.
By the way, it also told three splashes on the face is actually the best way to get in.
Yeah, okay. Good to know.
It mimics diving into cold water, which we're designed to do as human beings.
Yep.
So with a couple of hands, three splashes, and then you can wash the rest of yourself because your body's now kind of like ready.
Yeah,
and it's harder to back out of it then as well.
Yeah, beautifully said. And it breaks through the comfort crisis that most of us in this current world are a bit like frogs in a boiling pot, where we've got so comfortable that anything outside becomes a headache, and therefore those resilience and commitment muscles start wither on the vine. But it's been an awesome chat, Max. Is there anything else that we haven't covered that you want to say before we close out?
Yeah, I want to say, and it's something I learned from my mother, is that money is a taboo subject in Australia, and it should not be. Is that please have a conversation with someone about money. If you only feel comfortable talking about it with a broker or someone, that's fine. But talk to friends, talk to family, because they are facing what you're facing. They're going through what you're going through. They understand it. And never be frightened of talking to kids about money, because ignorance is no excuse. And that's what you're giving your kids if you let them get to the age of 18 or 20 without ever speaking about money. So please talk about money. Talk about it.
Yeah, I love it. Really sage advice. So,
and don't forget to come back to the book, Spending Fast and Slow. I this is recorded on video as well. So if you see the video, I've got it on camera here.
We're definitely done. I'm going to give it another plug in a minute. If we put a bow around our two conversations over the last two episodes, what are the key takeaways that really bring it all together?
Yeah, firstly, get your fundamentals sorted out. Once you've fixed your spending, and I mean not fixed at a low level, but fixed at a level you're comfortable with, then you've got a chance to save and invest the difference. But investing is all about taking action. If you don't take action, you're just a bystander. And so please take action. I know that you were talking just then about in our comfort bubble. I was in that. I bought my first investment property at age 39. You know, there was so many years, decades wasted that I could have been investing. But nevertheless, if I started at 39 and at 55, I'm in a good position, it's possible. You know, you don't realize how much time you've got left. Even someone who's 55, you've got another decade to go of earning money. A decade's a long time in property. It's a long time in shares. It's a long time to make money. Just do something. Take action.
100% agree, and I've always said, Max, it's never too late to start, but it's always too late to wait. Mm. So, spot on. Final question before we do the wrap. If I ask you to get invested, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, well, it's take some action. Take some action and do something that's going to go towards your future. Ultimately, though, set some goals. There's no reason to be invested if you don't have some goals. Goals for your life, and know that you're not going to work forever. You are going to have to retire at some point. And what does life look like then? So please, being invested is about setting yourself some goals and then working towards doing them. And investing is just a tool to get there, like anything else, or a vehicle to get
there. Totally love it. For those that have really resonated with your message, like I have, Max, how can we get a copy of your book, mate?
So it's available on Booktopia, on Amazon. It's also in most of the big bookstores, although I've been told it's not in some of the regional bookstores, which is a bit annoying, but it is in most bookstores. And of course, you can also hit our website, goldeneggs.info, and there's a link in there as well.
Perfectly done. We'll put a link in the show notes. And I just want to mention now that as a special reward for Get Invested listeners, you're very generously giving away a copy of your great book, Spending Fast and Slow.
Mate, I'll give a bunch of copies away.
Okay, they're very generous indeed. But we want those that are interested to actually take some action, as we've talked about consistently during our chat. And to do that, I want you to email me at hello, that's H-E-L-L-O, at knowhowproperty.com.au. And I want you to put Spending Fast and Slow in the subject header. And then I want you to answer the question, what's your top takeaway from today on Max's discussion on Spending Fast and Slow? And I'll share that with Max, and then Max can send you a bunch of copies of that fantastic book. So thanks again for your very generous time today, Max, and very keen to keep the conversation going.
Mate, thanks so much for having me. It's been an absolute blast. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Get Invested on the Property Hub podcast channel, your home for property investment insights and inspiration. And don't leave yet. until you've taken the next step towards living by design. By getting my award-winning book, Get Invested, absolutely free when you sign up at knowhowproperty.com.au or bushymartin.com.au. And finally, make sure you subscribe to Property Hub to get your weekly dose of Get Invested inspiration along with every episode of Realty Talk, Australia's leading property show for red-hot property investing news and insights direct from industry leaders and influencers. Remember to always get invested in your knowledge, and I look forward to seeing you next time.